Episode 155 of the Read to Lead podcast is brought to you by cloud accounting software FreshBooks, offering their 30-day unrestricted free trial to you right now. To claim it, just go to freshbooks.com/read to lead and enter Read to Lead in the How Did You Hear About Us section.
If you look at where jobs have been created in the U.S. over the last decade or so, they haven't been created by large corporations. They've been created by people building their own business.
Welcome to the Read to Lead podcast with Jeff Brown. Jeff believes that if you desire to achieve true success in business and in life, then consistent and intentional reading is a must. The Read to Lead podcast will not only help you narrow this ever-important reading list, but also bring you key insights and valuable feedback from some of today's most successful and inspiring authors. And now, here's Jeff.
Hi there, and welcome to the podcast. It's dedicated to your personal and professional growth. Among the things we dig into here are, of course, leadership, personal growth, productivity, career, business, marketing, sales, and entrepreneurship. I'm struggling to determine which of those areas today's book fits into. It hits on a topic that I don't believe has ever been discussed here on the show before, and that is that many of us have been raised on the traditional notion of a three-stage approach to our working lives: education, followed by work, and then retirement. But this very well-established pathway is already beginning to collapse. That, according to authors Linda Gratton and Andrew Scott. Whether you're 18, 45, 60, or somewhere in between, you're going to need to do things very differently from previous generations and learn to structure your life in completely new ways. The book we're going to dig into today is designed to help us do exactly that. In a moment, you and I will be joined by Linda Gratton. She's the co-author, along with Andrew Scott, of the book The 100-Year Life, Living and Working in an Age of Longevity. I plan to ask Linda about what statistics today say about average life expectancies and what that means for you, examples of workable alternatives to the traditional three-stage life that make a long life a gift rather than a curse, some of the ways this new reality impacts your family, your marriage, and your kids, and much, much more. If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you probably know that I'm a big believer in using cloud accounting software. If you're in business for yourself, maybe you're a freelancer or an entrepreneur, I've been using FreshBooks cloud accounting software since 2009. And I could not be more pleased that they believe enough in the Read to Lead podcast to want to continue sponsoring the show on into 2017. As part of the all-new FreshBooks launched in late September, one of the things I have noticed is how much faster I get paid when I invoice a client. The payment options for your clients are numerous, including the use of a credit card right there from the invoice they're viewing online. And when they pay it via the online invoice, I see it in my bank account within just a few days. Now, if you're not using a service like this, it's probably not unusual for you to mail an invoice to a client. Maybe you email it, but chances are you're sending it snail mail. But either way, once you send it out, you're probably waiting a few weeks before you get paid. How would you like to cut that down to just 3 or 4 days? That's one of just many advantages I see to using the all-new FreshBooks cloud accounting software. As you heard me mention at the very beginning of this episode, they're offering a free 30-day unrestricted trial to anyone who listens to this show. All you need to do is go to freshbooks.com/read to lead. That's freshbooks.com/read to lead. And then enter Read to Lead when you get to the How Did You Hear About Us section. Every feature inside FreshBooks will be available for you to use for the entire 30 days. No obligation to keep it after that, but I think once you try it, you'll wonder why you didn't start using FreshBooks cloud accounting software sooner. Again, that address is freshbooks.com/read to lead. Linda Gratton is professor of management practice at the London Business School, where she teaches an elective on the future of work and directs an executive program on human resource strategy. She's a fellow of the World Economic Forum. She's ranked in the top 15 in the world by Business Thinkers 50, by the way, and was named the best teacher at London Business School in 2015. And fortunately for us, she is the co-author of the book, The 100-Year Life, Living and Working in an Age of Longevity. Linda, it is a pleasure to have you. Thanks so much for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for asking me.
Well, I thought we would begin by having you shed some light on what the statistics today say about average life expectancies. It seems like you and your co-author are the only folks talking about this. Is that true?
Well, certainly, Jeff, the really fascinating thing that Andrew and I realized when we began to think about the future was that people are talking a lot about technology and how that's going to impact us in the coming decades. But really, what's really fascinating is that we're going to live longer, and each one of us will live longer than our parents, and certainly a great deal longer than our grandparents. And in fact, we can assume that a significant proportion of the kids born today will be living into their 100 years.
When most people think about that, and this has been the case historically for me personally, they don't think too fondly or positively on the idea of living to be 100 or more. Why do you believe that is, historically speaking?
Well, I think, you know, we're not really used to it. You know, if you think about the people you know who are 100 or even 90, you look at them and think, I don't really want to be like that. But what we're beginning to see, Jeff, is a real redesign of the whole of life, where actually it's not that you're going to live to 100 and be ill for 70, you know, from 70 years on, but actually you're going to significantly have longer and productive lives right through to your 80s, your 90s, even into your 100s. And that, we think, is a fantastic opportunity. But of course, for society and indeed for governments, a real big challenge.
Mm. Coincidentally, my wife's great-grandmother, she just passed away about 2 or 3 years ago. She was 107.
Wow.
When she passed away. So my wife is expecting to live to be about 150.
And so she's already prepared. Actually, that's true. You know, those of us who've got people in our family who've already lived long lives, we're much more likely to say, yeah, I can imagine that. But that's what we've all got to now be thinking.
Talk about, if you would, Linda, this lockstep, I think is the word you use, that is age and stage, and why it disappears in what you call this sort of new multi-stage life.
Well, you know, one of the things to think about is, if I were to say to each one of you, you're going to live to 100 years, one of the first things you might say, well, is how am I going to finance that? Well, you finance it in two ways. You either save more than you currently do, and then for many of us, a great deal more, and or you work longer. How long? Well, if you're going to live until you're 100, you're going to be working into your 70s, late 70s, early 80s. And so suddenly you think about your life and think, well, how could I possibly do that? How could I possibly still have the three stages of full-time education, full-time work, full-time retirement? That's obviously going to go. We're obviously going to have multi-stage lives. You know, if I told you now you're going to work flat out until the age of 78, you'd say, well, hang on, why is it only the kids that are taking gap years? Why can't I take a gap year or sabbatical? Why can't I go off and build my own business? Why can't I go off and do a portfolio? And actually, most of the institutions that create the context for our life, governments, education institutions, corporations, really believe that it's a three-stage life that's going to remain. And so many of the practices and processes around us are built on that. But once that lockstep breaks, when, you know, we no longer simply do the three-stage life, and actually each one of us makes a decision to live our own life, then suddenly you can't have lockstep anymore. And we think that's going to be one of the major challenges that organizations face.
Mm. And of course, there's more to think about than work and finances. There's also the intangibles that you talk about. Talk about asset management in terms of things like friendship and knowledge and health and fitness.
Well, you know, when we think about our lives, many of us have spent a bit of time planning for our tangible assets. You know, do I have enough money? Have I put enough money into my house and so on? But actually, it turns out that whilst tangible assets are very good at helping you to retire, they're not very good at helping you to work longer, which is really what many of us will be doing. And so to help you work longer and to have a more productive life, we have to focus on our intangible assets. You know, things like, am I helping myself to be productive? productive? You know, am I really keeping my vitality levels high? Am I really thinking about transformation? We've got, Jeff, on our website, if you go to www.100yearlife.com, you'll see a diagnostic that will help your listeners to find out where they stand. Are you building your assets? Are you depleting them? Or are you maintaining them? And actually, more than 10,000 people have already completed that diagnostic. So it gives you really interesting information about where you stand in terms of, are you really building enough? And as you said, some of them are obvious, but some of them are less obvious. You know, friendships, for example, very important for vitality. You know, broad networks, very important to help you to transform. So these are very important assets for us to consider.
Let's dig into a little bit more detail, if we can, Linda, some examples of workable alternatives to the three-stage life, education, work, retirement, that make a long life a gift rather than a curse.
Well, here's one alternative: taking time out to rejuvenate. You know, taking time out, maybe when you're 50 or maybe when you're 60, to really relearn, to get your vitality levels up. So we think that's going to be an important stage. Secondly, building your own business. The truth is that actually, if you look at where jobs have been created in the US over the last decade or so, they haven't been created by large corporations. They've been created by people building their own business. So why don't more of us really think about, how do I build a business in some part of my life? Or finally, what about, you know, creating a portfolio where you spend some time in the week doing work time, spending time in it, which is remunerated in terms of work, but also spending other times, you know, working in your community, doing things with your kids. So I think that life could potentially be a lot more fun as a multi-stage life. But of course, we've got to plan to make that work. So if you take a look at the US right now, there's as many people building a business over the age of 55 as there are under the age of 30. So, you know, people are going out and building their own business. People are taking time out to relearn. There are lots and lots of new educational practices that allow you to engage in lifelong learning. So we think we're sort of at the cusp of a big change. And of course, you know, we've got to take a look around and say, what's going to work for me? And I think people have to be very agile about imagining what the future is going to be, but also thinking about their own life within that. What do I have to do right now to make a difference?
And does that speak then to when you talk about time and respect to recreation versus recreation? Is that what you're hinting at?
Yes. I mean, that's going to be a really important part of it. If, you know, we're living longer at a time when jobs are changing, you know, technology is creating opportunities, but also destroying some of the jobs that we thought were pretty safe in our society. And so we've got to actively invest in learning. And some of that we'll do in what we used to be recreational time, the weekends, the evenings. But I think we also have to invest in taking time out to learn. We have to go back to school, as it were. And we might have to do that at a number of stages in our life.
I know when I was in my 20s and had come out of college, I had this attitude about school and learning that was basically, boy, I'm glad that phase is over. I don't have to do that anymore. And it wasn't until until my early 30s that I began developing an appreciation all over again for learning and realizing the value of being a lifelong learner and really digging into reading to the point that it became one of my passions, when in my 20s it was something I didn't want to ever have to do again. So I see the value in that.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely right, Jeff. But, you know, one of the reasons we're optimistic about the future is that at the same time as people are living longer, there's also incredible new developments in learning technologies. You know, you probably didn't like school so much, and I didn't either, because of the exam system. Well, actually, you know, you don't need to examine people now to learn, to find out whether they've learned something. You know, these online learning have really taken off across the world. Millions and tens of millions of people have signed on to online programs. And I think that virtual reality developments will also really change the way we learn. We're watching that very carefully over the next couple of years. But we think that the way that you learn, the methodology of learning, is going to change very considerably.
We've hinted at some of this, but what are some of the ways all of this impacts families and marriages and children? I mean, some things seem obvious, but maybe there are some not so obvious ways this impacts us.
Yeah, I mean, the old traditional marriage of, you know, a full-time working dad and a full-time mum at home just seems sort of improbable, really, doesn't it, when people are going to live so long? You know, just from an economic perspective, would you really want to be the person who's going to take a whole family and your partner through maybe what could be 60 or 70 years? It seems preposterous. You know, we have to think about what marriage means. You know, when marriage was sort of created, as it were, it was a 20-year institution. But if you marry now at 30 and live to 100, that's a very long time to be married. But and what happens when marriages break and you remarry? What happens with stepchildren and so on? So we think that there's many opportunities. And right now already we're seeing differences. Two examples at the different stages. One is people are marrying much later than they were. You know, when I was young, people marrying in their 20s are now marrying in their 30s. So already they're sort of putting that big life decision off to learn a bit more about themselves before they choose a partner. And secondly, if you look at divorce rates, they're highest in people who are over 60 and 70. So, you know, people are saying, actually, I can start again. So I think you're going to see a really interesting reconfiguration of families. And of course, some families are now four generations. How do you work between those generations? Very exciting challenges ahead.
You have to think really long and hard if you're standing at the aisle and uttering the words, "Till death do us part."
You certainly do.
Well, the book again is The 100-Year Life, Living and Working in an Age of Longevity. I highly recommend it. And it's a fascinating topic, I think, and a book that you'll truly enjoy. I have a question or two, not directly related to the book, but before I move to that, is there anything else from the book you want to make sure that we know?
Well, I think, you know, the book is relentlessly positive. And, you know, we've had a bit of criticism of that and people saying, well, hang on, you know, old age, it's all about, you know, having Alzheimer's and you know, these terrible diseases. But actually, that's not my approach. Don't think about living a long time, living 100 to 100, simply in terms of old age. It's not just about old age. It's really about the redesign of every single part of your age. And I think the diagnostic that we have on the website just really gives you a really good, you know, insight into where you're heading right now.
You know, I'm 50. I'm going to be 51 very, very soon, and feel quite fortunate to, at this stage of my life, to still have both parents. My mother turned 75 last month. My dad next week turns 80, and both doing fairly well, all things considered. If you were to ask my dad when he was younger how long he expected to live, I don't think he would have expected to live as long as he has, quite frankly,
based on
family history. So.
Yeah, exactly. And so the fascinating thing about this, Jeff, is it's unfolding in front of our very eyes. You know, every single 10 years, people live an extra 2 years. I mean, that's a phenomenal insight, isn't it? And that means that we have to keep changing ourselves. You can't live the way that your grandparents lived. You can't even really live the way that your parents lived, because you're probably going to live longer than them. So it's a real redesign happening right now.
Fascinating topic for sure. Well, as a professor, you do quite a bit of public speaking, and I'm sure you do some outside the university as well. I would love to hear, if you have them, any tips for keeping people's attention, delivering an impactful and memorable talk. What would you say your best tips are?
Yeah, my number one tip is building a narrative. In fact, we're just building a presentation at the moment that I'm going to give in a few weeks' time. And I said to my team, you know, what are the stories here? In fact, if you take a look at the book, you'll see that we talk about Jack, Jane and Jimmy. And those were stories of people, because I said to my co-author, people really want to hear about stories. So I think number one, build stories of other people. And I would say number two, bring the presentation back to yourself. And I, just as you've in this conversation said a little bit about yourself, Jeff, and I've said a bit about myself, that's a very good presentational technique. In my presentations, I talk about my kids. I talk about the challenges I've faced. And I think that people find that interesting. And you can actually talk about some complex and difficult issues if you speak about it through your own experience. So I think telling stories, building a narrative, and then thirdly, you know, have some aha insights, you know, something, some data which people look at it and say, you know, I didn't know that. You know, like I said to you earlier, there's as many people getting divorced over the age of 60 as there are at any other point in time. That's an interesting aha. You perhaps didn't know that. So also try and find information that people really haven't heard before and that makes them to think, oh, okay, now I need to think a bit differently about this.
Mm. Great advice. Well, finally, I'll ask Linda, if you know, what's coming up next for you? What are you and your team working on now that you're excited about?
Well, believe it or not, Jeff, we're going to write the second book on long lives. We were really sort of delighted about the success of the 100 Year Life. I don't know if you know, but in Japan right now, it's the best-selling book.
So
it's sold, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of copies. It's done very well around the world. We almost got the FT Business Book of the Year prize this year. Mm. Just missed it. So we want to carry on. And the book that we're researching at the moment is a book that says, how do governments and how do institutions, education institutions, corporations, how are they going to change? And how do we realize that the place that we're in at the moment in the world is the time that we're in is a time of what we call liminality, a time when, you know, a lot of the traditions of the past have disappeared, and yet we don't really know what the future is going to be. We all feel sort of pretty anxious about the future. And so it's really about that, you know, in a time of anxiety, how do people find a way through, and how can institutions like governments and corporations help them?
I don't know if you've ever heard the name David Berkus. He's written a book that came out recently called Under New Management, where he's challenging companies to rethink the way they do a lot of different things, a lot of you know, decades-old assumptions that we should rethink. And it might make sense for me to introduce the two of you, because there may be some overlap there.
Oh, yeah, great. Thank you. No, that would be super. And I think corporations totally have to change their perspectives. For example, on age stereotyping, you know, what is it to be 50? What is it to be 60? What is it to be 70? All that's changing now.
Very true. Well, thank you again so much for your time, Linda.
My pleasure.
This has been a fascinating read for me, and a book that I intend to recommend to everyone I know.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Jeff.
There are a number of resources for you to take advantage of here, and I've listed them all in the show notes page for this episode, including Linda's website, the special website for the book that includes that diagnostic tool that Linda talked about, how to order the book right now should you want to do that, and everything else we talked about. Just visit the show notes page at this address, readtoleadpodcast.com/155 for episode 155. I hope you'll consider visiting our sponsor's website for more information on FreshBooks Cloud Accounting Software. That's freshbooks.com/readtolead. And remember to enter Read to Lead in the How Did You Hear About Us section. I want to say thanks for all the recent 5-star ratings and reviews in iTunes and on Stitcher, including the recent 5-star rating and review from LeoBoy11, all the way from the Philippines. He says, the message Jeff shares is always so helpful. I enjoy the show and plan on recommending it to others. Thank you so much. If you'd like to leave a rating and review, a couple of ways to do that, readtoleadpodcast.com/iTunes and readtoleadpodcast.com/Stitcher. That does it for this week. I look forward to seeing you next time for the next edition of the Read to Lead podcast.
Thanks so much for listening to the Read to Lead podcast. As a subscriber, we challenge you to be more than just a passive listener. Become a vital member of the community. Visit us on the web at readtoleadpodcast.com. Until next time, remember, leaders read and readers lead.